And I gotta get construction crews in here by Columbus Day, so you got a guesstimate how long?
I've got four really good guys. 1 week, we're gone. That's fast. I need the job.
So the loonies are outside in the real world, and here we are with the keys to the loony bin, boys.
You might actually want to be grateful, and you're about to make some decent money.
What's the catch?
Patricia Willard scandal, 1984.
I want you to try to remember what happened 24 years ago.
Use your imagination.
The shrinks figured that with these new techniques they designed, they could release hidden memories.
You can hear me.
You okay?
I want to go home. I wouldn't tell anybody about this. If they find out about Hank, they're going to find out about the others.
Quit it, the others.
I want to come home. I am so sorry.
Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday, or mostly, it happens, we gather in a dank, dark basement, watch a movie, and talk about it for your enjoyment and listening pleasure. I'm your host, Colin, and I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars, including...
Travis.
Gary.
Brent.
And this is Tom!
Tom! Holy shit, Tom! Where'd you come from?
I'm back! Homecoming!
Yay! Welcome back, Tom.
Yay! It's good to be back.
So this is for like a one night only? No, you'll be back in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'll be back in a couple weeks, but yeah. It's good to be back, in town.
Who let you through the security?
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome back to the Saturday Night Freak Show.
It's like, it's good to be back.
It's like old home week.
It is. Yep. It is.
So we watched, this is Gary's first pick on the Saturday Night Freak Show as officially now a Freak Show member. What did we watch tonight, Gary?
We watched Brad Anderson's Session 9 from the year 2001, starring David Caruso, Josh Lucas, Peter Mullen. Steven, I can never pronounce this guy's name. Gevenden?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's close enough. He's
he
not
also
listening.
Co-wrote it, I
And saw. Brendan Sexton.
Yeah, so the guy who played, was it Mark, Matt? What was that guy's name?
Mike?
Mike. He was co-wrote. Co-writer.
Yes,
yeah.
with Brad Anderson.
Mike was the guy who was the lawyer?
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He seemed pretty like upfront, like he was going to be a main character. You know, it seemed like his role was going to be like really big. And then it's like, oh, I thought he was going to have more to do. It seemed like he was like...
He was slightly more important than Jeff.
I think they're trying to throw you off of, because like Gordon's the main character guy that like owns his like own like
asbestos abatement crew.
So it seemed like you know they're trying to throw the attention away from him and onto this Mike guy that's like getting into the like whatever.
Yeah, because well, I mean, the movie's about a asbestos removal crew that's called in to remove. Or clean up the Danvers Mental Institution. This is a real place that existed in Massachusetts.
Danvers, Massachusetts, yep.
And it has, since the movie hits, it's been torn down.
Parts so it's like there's still a few... the main brick structure is still standing.
The craziest house.
They've started to build things. They were burned down on the property. So, you know, they don't know if it was the people that owned the company or some of the old patients burned it down.
Oh,
but they started to tear parts of it down.
Well, they said in this, and I assume that this is based on, you know, the real stuff, that it was on the National Historic Register and all that. Yep. So, I mean, you know, you wouldn't think that they'd go just burning it if it was.
Yeah, it looks like a bat.
The Kirkbride plant. I remember I was looking into.
Yeah, that's what they call it in the.
Yeah, no, that's a real thing. Yeah, because I looked into, like, at one point I was trying to come up with a movie idea that took place in a insane asylum. And looking at it, it's like there were so many of them across the United States built according to this Kirkbride, the guy who designed them. And it does look like, from the air, it looks like a big fucking bat.
It should be Arkham Asylum, basically. It's an Arkham Asylum.
Well, the funny thing is you mentioned that, and Arkham Sanatorium in Lovecraft's Something at the Door is actually fashioned after it, which after led Danvers. To yeah. which led to Arkham Asylum in the Batman universe. It was all related.
That's all this one.
But I was saving it for here instead of saying it during the movie. All right.
Before we dive too in, okay, this movie confused the fuck out of me.
What?
Someone's got to fucking brick by brick lay this thing out because, like, I'm fucking lost.
Okay, and we
first
should say,
off, yeah,
spoiler warning.
Yeah, spoiler
if you haven't
warning.
Seen it, this is about to get spoiler warning. Heavy.
Because, like,
I think we've always been, you know. We've always been a spoiler show.
I got lost. Yeah. I don't know what this movie was about. Someone's got to lay this out for us.
So what did you think the movie was about, Tom?
Dude, I...
A lazy asbestos crew?
kind of. I mean, I was, like, wondering, like, are they going to do their job? And I thought they were going
to
be, like...
You had to find out about... Like, aside from the like, we're like, okay, you guys got the job. Then the whole rest of the time, they're just like, you know that guy with his girlfriend. I know. It's like they just exposition to know who, like, the characters are the whole time.
This movie was like the slowest fucking movie ever, for one. Because, like, it was like, hey, they're getting this job to fucking do asbestos crew. And then they're working on the asbestos crew. It's like day one, working.
Well, like how desperate they are. You already know, like, from day the get-go. He's like, working. I can do it in 3 weeks. Two. And the guy's like, one, I can do it in 1 week.
Well, yeah. See, and I think that's what feeds into the whole movie.
Yeah.
I think you hit it right there because it is the desperation.
Yeah. So the lead guy, Gordon, has apparently we find out that he's got a new baby. There's some trouble at home. He may be losing his job,
his company.
His company, right. He needs this job to stay afloat. So he underbids. He's got like two other guys, I guess, are out there trying to. To take
yeah, the there's
job.
Two other companies. Yep.
And so to get the security of doing this, he tells the guy he'll do it in 1 week. When even his crew is like, this is a 3 week minimum job,
right?
Which they're probably padding it maybe, but they're
right.
like, no, less
2 weeks could have done it, right?
And he's like, we can do it in one. So this adds a psychological stress to this character. So I mean, that's what the movie becomes. Is it's a character study disguised as a haunted house movie, because I think that's what you think. It's an insane asylum, and you're like, is there ghosts or whatever? But it's actually like a character piece looking at these different characters folding under, or one of them specifically folding
I guess.
And mental illness.
So,
were you scared at all? It's a horror movie. First of all, the contract the horror movie has with its audience.
Wait, is it a horror? I don't think it's a horror movie.
It could creep you out.
Because
I'd actually say this is one of those, like, this movie...
It had the atmosphere of the insane asylum was kind of scary.
And that's my thing, is that's the actor that doesn't get any credit in the movie, is the asylum itself. It is a character unto
itself.
It's
like the lighting. It's like, this is just like this weird Auburn movie, and, like, there's lights everywhere. I mean, but... It's like creepy enough. It's like desolate enough where they allow enough shadow. I do like this movie when it comes to lighting a lot, just because they're not afraid to have dark areas. It's not all about perfect lighting. But
all of it was shot on video, I noticed.
Yeah,
all
you can tell.
The whites would bloom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you could early digital.
Yeah. But I think like later in the movie, when you start to like lose lights, I think it gives like the movie power, you know, once again, where you're imagining some ghostly shit happening when really it's just like, the generator. Everybody's minds.
When one of the characters appears, like he disappears at some point, and you're like, so well, something must have happened to him. And then he appears later. A character sees this guy in the stairwell.
That was cool.
And at that point, I mean, I remember when I first watched it, I'm like, is this a ghost? Are we seeing this guy's ghost?
Ghost is using the image that they know of Hank, this guy that, you know, the...
Yeah.
Well, the smart aleck rude guy of the group, you know, the...
Well, Josh Lucas.
Like me, I've seen it like 30 times, so I know how it runs. But, I mean, the first time I saw it, I just happened to trip into it on demand. And I thought, well, I'll check it out, you know. And as I'm going along, I'm like... I wasn't quite sure. Usually I'm pretty good at figuring out what's going on in the movie, but there's just too much that made it look like it was one character. I don't want to give any spoilers yet because we'll get further into it. But I do like how they drug you along, and the whole way it still left me guessing right up to the end, you know, on how it was going to go.
See it coming.
Yeah.
It was a ways into it before I was, you know, it was either at the reveal or right before it. I mean, it kept me, you know, in the dark for a while.
See, I kind of saw, like, I saw a lot of it coming in, and I saw... Like, I knew it wasn't a ghost movie because there's no ghost. Like, if it was a ghost movie, ghosts would have revealed themselves earlier. They would have done certain cues to
that's interesting.
Well, they like show them. I mean, I've seen enough horror movies and studied the genre enough through Colin to know what a ghost movie would do, and they didn't show
it. Tipped
any
itself
cues.
That it wasn't an actual ghost
movie.
Well, but I think they're going for a Shining ghost movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I think they're going for. It's not like the long haired, white dressed Jay ghost. You know, they're going for that Shining where a man's going to somehow get obsessed with this building, then go crazy for his family. I mean, it's kind of what they did do.
Even in The Shining,
it just doesn't tell you there's ghosts.
They do stuff that trips it that the place itself is haunted. In this one, it shows it trips no way in. There's nothing that tips its hat that the place is haunted.
You have, like, that character Mike who was going to be a lawyer who, like, somehow... I mean, this is the weirdest character of the group to me, just because... Yeah, they just have exposition about, like, you know, the dude, the landowner or whatever he is, the security, the groundskeeper or whatever the hell, shows the guys around when they're bidding the job. And he's just explaining, like, oh, this is the scary room that happens here. Here's the hydro, whatever. Here's the, you know, he's... explaining to everybody why you should be freaked out of this place. Then, when they're just talking about, it came down for whatever budgetary reasons, the one guy's like, Mary Hobbs. You know, like, that's like, what the fuck? I was like, I thought that guy was going to be the son of Mary Hobbs or some shit like that.
Right,
because
they
fashion it that way, where this one guy's, like, obsessed, obviously, with prior knowledge. Well, he said his dad was a...
His dad was a lawyer on the Hobbs case.
Yeah, so, but then
they got it shut down in 84.
Going to the basement, going to some records room to, like, track down the Mary Hobbs case and, like, listen to the set. And that's why the movie's called Session 9, is because it's all the recording sessions that the doctor had with this Mary Hobbs lady that has split personality for something that happened on Christmas in 19 whatever what yeah, was it 50 yeah. Uh-huh, I don't know if it's
that year name. Yeah in Lowell.
And I think that's why that's the only ghostly thing to this is it just has the creepy isn't Mary
because you hear these tapes like played over a lot of other stuff. I think you know like after you've seen the movie when you watch that or you know when you're seeing it again it's all about these like repress, you know, she's repressed the memory of what she's done by splitting her personality and becoming other people. And like, that's actually what's happened in the movie that we're watching.
Right. Yeah.
So they are related, you know?
Because I actually, this is the second time I watched it, but even the first time I watched it, right from the get-go, I knew, Garden killed his wife and kid and he's repressing his memory. That's why he's like looking at the phone and it says home and he's just staring at it because he can't remember that he killed them.
So
he just knows there's something going on. Yeah, to me.
Yeah.
Just even the first time I watched it, just because you never see you see his wife and kid across the street.
Yeah.
And then when he like shuts the door always you hear her like, what are the flowers for? And it's very echoey. I'm like, oh, she's dead.
Plus you saw the white roses later, they were covered with like red stuff and blood and stuff.
But then if you look at the I don't want to give away the end,
we
might as well now. Yeah. Well, at the end when he's doing the pictures, the tank's on the ground with the red paint spilled out, and it's the same thing you saw in the van. Yeah. That's what threw me. And that's okay. Well, we were talking about the ghost element when they first found the tapes. Gordon cuts his finger. He gets the dust in his eyes. So I'm thinking it's because the blood's been spilled. Now he finds this. That kind of it was a red herring, but it kind of made me think along that line.
The tape is like somehow releasing. Like,
it lets it out.
Yeah. Like all these guys are experiencing some kind.
But Gordon heard it the first time through once he was alone. Now, here's the thing. I watched the special features and Peter Mullen, however you say that, the guy that played Gordon, he's talking about the actor. He's on the roof where they do the roof scene. He said for a brief second, he goes, I don't know where it came from. He goes, I thought about what if I jumped off of this roof? He goes, no, I'm not suicidal. He goes, and I don't know if it was the creepiness of the place. He goes, but it kind of got to me. And he does talk about in one other scene where he knew he had to do some of these heavy scenes with the thing about the kid and all that. He went to be by himself to get himself in character. And he heard somebody call his name. And he's thinking, I'm expecting somebody to come around and go, oh, sorry to interrupt, but we need you on set. He goes, and no one came. Yeah. He goes, so the place did get inside our heads. Because he goes, it is creepy as hell in there.
Yeah. The only time in the movie that they did do something ghostly, actually, and I thought this was really cool. I didn't notice it the first time I saw this movie. But Mike, the lawyer character that's listening to these tapes, the doctor on the tapes is talking to Mary Hobbs, who has the split personalities of Princess, Billy, and Simon. And Simon's, of course, the evil one that no one talks about or whatever. But when Gordon's got a young nephew working on this, which is played by the kid from Empire Records.
Yes, he played Warren on Empire Records.
Was he in anything else? I remember from this Empire Records.
Yeah, he was in Black Hawk Down. Right? Yeah, Royce on The Killing.
Huh.
So he's been in a few things.
Well, remember when he's walking and Mike goes, "You want me to put your mask on, princess?" And the guy goes, "What'd you say?" He goes, "Well, I didn't say anything."
Yeah, like he was possessed.
That's what I was like. That's kind of ghostly, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if he doesn't know what he said. I mean, it's like.
But he's reading the tapes. They complain. He's listening to the tapes downstairs. That's in his head, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Yeah. Does he not know he said princess?
I don't think
does
he
not
he
know
did.
He said put the mask on? I mean, the whole thing, does he not know he said it? Or just that he referred to him as princess?
Yeah, did he really say it? But it was weird because. Because he called him princess.
Yeah.
Well, he's facing away from the camera.
Yeah.
He says, like, put your mask on, princess. And the kid's like, I'm not your princess, dude. And he turns around. He's like, what?
Yeah, what?
Right.
Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? I'm not
your princess. Well, and that's what I'm saying. There was enough of that scattered throughout the movie with the different characters. David Crusoe on the roof. When he's up there buying something, goes, this is going to get ugly.
Yeah.
You know, they threw enough of that in there to where it would mislead the first time you saw it.
Yeah.
To where you didn't figure it out right away. That's what I said. Plus, it did keep me guessing.
Gordon is continually calling home and pleading with his wife, but all those conversations are really
one-sided.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we only hear it. And they call that out in the movie later on, like that the device of having, you hear a character talking to somebody on the phone, like, we all heard it, didn't we? Like, no. We just heard you talk.
Right. And kudos to Tom, because Tom called it out before Gordy could deliver the line in the movie. Tom's like, we didn't hear Amy. So, yeah, I thought that was good.
We didn't hear that shit. You guys got to help me out with the timeline real quick, because so when the movie starts, he hasn't yet murdered his wife.
I think he has right from the get-go.
No, sure. it's when he went home.
It's when he makes the bid for 1 week, and he goes home with the flowers. So that first time we see him go home with the flowers, she's still alive until he gets inside the house.
Yeah, because the thing that could probably cause him, the moment that character snaps is because he hasn't killed his wife yet.
Right.
He's downstairs. He's looking down the hallway. And then the voice goes, do it, Gordon, or something like that, right?
So he hears the voice in the asylum.
You hear Simon's voice, which Simon's probably just
which leads me to the end, but I won't bring that up yet.
Everybody's that's demon, the big question basically. At the but end.
Right.
Like, the question that probably got answered, then the only question is Simon a ghost that possesses people,
or
is Simon just basically your inner demons?
Yeah, it's just
everyone's inner demons.
We're wrapping some demons
so stressed out.
See, it's one of, I guess I always read it as, I mean, I think it's a red herring where they're trying to make it seem like a ghost, because I've talked to people who've seen this movie who do believe that it's a ghost, because you have or some kind of, you know, whatever
spirit
because it talks to Gordon. Hears it, apparently, or we don't know. When he walks in the asylum, a voice says, "Hello, Gordon."
Yeah,
and it's Simon's voice. We find out later on the Mary Hobbs tape.
Yep.
And then at the very end of the movie, you hear the doctor talking to quote unquote Simon, and says, "Where do you live, Simon?" And he says, "In the weak and the wounded,"
which is my favorite line in the movie because to me, every one of those characters is somehow wounded. They're broke down. It's like the asylum. They all, and that was the thing that I loved about this movie. They're as deteriorated and broke down on the inside as that asylum is. Because if you look at the asylum from the outside, the building looks nice.
Yeah.
Till you get inside and it's all broke down. Yeah. So are they.
Yeah.
And they're all susceptible in their own ways. So that's why I wasn't quite sure who it all took a hold of. Did it just get Gordon, or did it get into other people?
Well,
Mike was definitely a prime suspect for that.
Well, they all seem to have
the kid.
No, because it's all of them. Because the Hank, he gets this, the place basically makes him rich or whatever. He finds these coins in the basement. And he goes to.
I thought that was to that with the scratch and wins, and he's like, "Hey, I got you some scratch offs. Here you go."
Yeah, he's portrayed as just a very untrustworthy or a very whatever.
I like the fact that
a-hole.
When he found
the unreliable
all this money in the wall, he removes a brick and all this like money. It's like he hit the jackpot. All this, these coins start spilling out. And then we see the reverse shot of that on the other side of the wall. It's like
the crematorium.
Yeah. So like all that stuff is just stuff that's collected over the years, and they're burning these people.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That says hot and it shows the morgue and the screen's pulled open.
Yeah. So that was cool. Then Mike becomes obsessed obsessed with this case of Mary Hobbs, so that's his thing.
That's like right from the get-go, though. Yeah. Like right from the like I said, that guy had like some prior.
Well, he knew about. Well, his dad was attorney general.
Yeah.
But that's almost like a Shining. So it is like trying to. It's echoing the Shining, where the building itself is working on.
Did his dad win that
the
case?
Psychology of the
because
did he say he was fighting for the state or for the
hospital? Oh, right. Yeah. So he lost the case. No,
they won. They countersued and won.
They won. Okay.
Okay. Do we need to say that for the viewers? That was very confusing. Okay. So in the 80s, the case that got the hospital shut down, this character, Mike, his dad was the attorney general, worked on the case because they were using regression therapy,
repressed memory therapy,
and Mary Hobbs was apparently part of this satanic ritual abuse syndrome, which we talked about, I think, before on the podcast. I can't remember which
trick or treat, right?
Yep. But this is like the thing that they were talking about, where they would find these memories in these kids of parents coming into their rooms wearing robes. They'd take them out in the woods, and grandma and grandpa and everybody'd be there, and they'd all have sex and kill a newborn. None of this actually happened. It was all, recovered, quote unquote, recovered memories through these therapy sessions.
Well, and a lot of it was the psychologist prompting the victims in these directions, that they had no idea.
Like sell a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember reading a book about a deputy out in Washington who actually, same thing, daughter come in with these big stories. They start saying the other deputies, and they're all like, no, we didn't do any of that. And they go through it all. Well, of course, in the end, come to find out, he had talked to his pastor, and his pastor goes, look, you did this. You need to come right with God. You need to confess. So he confesses, signs his confession, goes to prison. It comes out it's all false. He can't get out of prison because he confessed.
Yeah.
He's stuck in prison to this day because he wrote a confession and can't get out because it's past the time of introducing new material. It did destroy a lot of families, that whole thing, in those days, because it was just that whole thing, the between the daycares and everything else and all that. Yeah, we've talked about it, daycare workers riding around on brooms and all that. Yeah. It was just insane.
Yeah, there was another thing actually that occurred to me where they were trying to maybe overtly direct you towards a ghost was the reappearance of, patient number 444, right? I mean, it's significant.
That was Mary Hobbs, right?
It's Mary Hobbs, but when Gordon's making one of the phone calls to his wife, which, again, that phone call was interesting because, we know after the fact that his wife is dead. He's talking to no one. He's having a conversation in his mind. There's no one on the other end of the phone. And when his nephew walks up, that's when he's like, Wendy, you've got to talk to me. And then all of a sudden it's like, Wendy, hello, hello.
Like she hung up.
Yeah, like she hung up when he heard the nephew. But he's sitting over the broken headstone of 444.
Right.
The pictures, we find out like he eventually makes it to the cell of 444.
Yeah.
And
that's where he's supposed to kill because.
Well, all of the pictures of his family are up on the wall.
Yeah.
Well, here's another one actually, though, because Red, who's the guy from First Blood cop show?
David Caruso.
So you find out later, he kind of continues. He's the first guy that's like noticing something's wrong with Gordon. He hit his wife. He's going to ruin everything.
Oh, well, we should talk about that, too.
But then you find out that later, he is in a hallucination. He is part of Gordon's, fucked up thing because you find out Gordon killed him earlier the day. As soon as Gordon found out that, you actually find out that Gordon, Mike came back, or Mike, Hank came back at night to come get all these coins and all this whatever, but he gets moidered. And
oh my God,
or lobotomized,
and you find it, and he sees a empty jar of Jiffy. And at first, we were joking around, fucking ghost, what a bastard, left your favorite jar of peanut butter and it's empty. But then we remembered, oh shit, Gordon had Jiffy peanut butter. We're like, Gordon killed
him. That was pretty fucking sharp, I think. You guys picked up on that. I was like Jiffy, shit.
Well, and it was the second time around when you see him get out of the truck, you're like, Jiffy! And the fact that you guys made such a big point about it the first time around, it's like, holy shit.
Because it could have just been product placement,
God damn it, they figured it out.
You figure out that he's like, when a dude finds Hank with the lobotomy pin still in his eye, or the lobotomy stake, or whatever you want to call it, needle, still in his eye, and he's like, Gordy said you did it! And he attacks him. So you find out he's talking to a hallucination for the rest of the time of that character, and he keeps telling him to wake up, Gordy.
Yeah, which
but he has repressed.
I think that's kind of interesting that, like, you know, maybe this is just for the sake of, you know, movie storytelling or whatever, but here's a man with mental illness where his mental illness is trying to cure itself.
Yeah.
Right.
It's trying to, you know,
pull him out of
hallucinations.
It.
Like, you need to wake up. You need to take a good look at him, you know, because it's like you are deceiving yourself. I like the way that Gordy's psychosis, like, you know, kind of there's all these like hints about it. Like, first of all, it's like, what's wrong with your leg? Oh, I think I pulled a muscle. Later on, you find, and then when he admits that, like, I hit my wife. Which he didn't hit his wife, he killed her. But all he remembers
is... Well, he did hit her first, in fairness.
Yeah. So then it becomes, she splashed, you know, something on me. So it's like, well, he's becoming more aware of what he's done, I guess, as the movie goes on. And we are, too, along with him.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that we didn't touch on yet, is they do play off this whole tension between Gordon and Phil, which is David Crusoe, about... Phil undermining him, almost like he's trying to take his company away. You know, he wants to take over. He wants to be in charge. Yeah. And they do play that off. And I love how they start out that they're talking to Jeff, the kid, you know, Gordy's nephew. And they're like, oh, you better hope you get some of Gordy's genes because he's like the Zen master.
Yeah.
I've never seen Gordy lose his cool. But we start to see Gordy losing his cool, you know.
In a very severe...
Right, especially that first scene on the roof. With,
he may be messy in the front, but I'll make sure he's...
And that's what's so great about it is
the party in the back. When he's going to be business in the front.
He may be a party in the back, but I'll make sure he's business in the front.
Well, I like when they had to get that in. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like when they came in and Hank and Mike. And Hank goes, is this the new guy? And he goes, yeah, they call it Jeff. You know, they have Jeff.
The way the guys, like, the way
they interact.
Yeah, I know, but it seems genuine, you know.
Yeah, it does. That's what I'm saying.
I like the writing of this movie. It's like, it's very clever, I think, in its writing, because it's building these characters and telling you a story at the same time through them. Like, you get to know a little bit, like, about each one of these guys. And, I lost my fucking train of thought.
You get to know each one of these genuine guys through their dialogue and their characters.
I just think the only
thing
was insincere was the Phil and Hank thing. Because I don't think, like, if someone steals your girlfriend, I don't think you keep them in your business. I just don't. Especially when you're a small contracting business.
It wasn't his business.
He is trying to get rid of Hank.
If Caruso had his way, he would have kicked the guy to the curb like 6 months ago or whatever.
Right. And Gordy tells him, I don't think he's a liability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I think you're wrong. And he goes, I don't care.
You got it?
Yeah. Well, it was just the interplay between the guys seems very genuine. It seems like conversations that you can imagine these men having with each other.
Well, at a workplace, absolutely. Yeah.
Mike just said creepy things to people to throw you off. Right?
Well, Mike
was that character, just be like, no, there's something deeper in this.
Did that strike you as like maybe he was the least experienced actor?
No, that struck me as he was the most devious. He was the one that was probably...
He was supposed to be he was supposed to be your fucking, here's Johnny,
but they do that with Caruso as well. Like, they make him seem like he's, you know, Caruso may be the one who's killing everybody.
I think they have to do that with everyone, though.
Right. Yeah, you never get the impression that the kid's doing it.
Well, the kid is too stupid to do anything, in all seriousness. He's the victim in it all.
Yeah.
You know, he's just struggling along. He's not really part of the crew. So he hasn't developed the relationship. He's the new kid. So he's there to get the laughs, like you said, partying back, but business in the front. Yeah. The, what are you, lobotomy case? And he's drooling the stuff out of his mouth. He's the dumb kid. He's basically Warren from Empire Records now that he got a job outside of Empire Records. Yeah. He works somewhere else now. Yeah. He's still Warren.
Right.
A little bit older and longer hair.
And that's what's so great about this film. Like, each character has a perfectly logical, reality-based reason for what they're going through. And even the fact that they are actually, they're like every situation that they're going through, like having or going back and watching it a second time, you're like, well, that makes sense because the generator was out, or you know, because somebody pulled the cord on the power, or because you know this or that. Like, everything does check out. There's nothing in this film that doesn't check out without the supernatural. You know, I mean, it's not a stretch. Like, that's just, again, good writing, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It's telling a story, and in a way that really I haven't seen before, I don't think. Because
what if Simon wasn't in there until he went to the room, you know, because they showed him the room. They showed him the rooms before when he first said, hello, Gordon, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, what if he wouldn't have heard Simon? I mean, even though Simon's in all of us, you know, maybe.
Well, that's my question too.
Mary Hobbs just unlocked it.
Is Simon in all of us? I mean, that's a concept. It's an idea.
Well, in the weak and the wounded.
Or is it like the physical ghost? And I know physical ghost is it's an oxymoron,
I think it's metaphorically the demon in all of us.
Or is it an actual ghost going into everybody that, you know, like picking somebody right, that enters the asylum? I think it
could
be both,
really, in a weird way. Just because, I mean, anybody could be under the influence and if you think of like shit like shared collective conscious or anything like that, you know, even though Simon can just be this person, whoop, he can come into this person. Yeah. As long as you're, whatever, open to it.
I was wondering if Simon, like, where do you live, Simon? There's a big pause. I thought it was maybe like everywhere, you know, or something, but the weak and the wounded.
Well, which is true, because anybody can be the weak and the wounded. You can be fine, and then whoop. Be crazy.
And that's a big part. I mean, had he killed his wife before he entered that asylum, it would be different. But the fact that he had gone through for the tour and then
went home to do it.
I had a feeling when they did the tour of the building, I had a feeling that someone would get corrupted. They threw a couple red herrings. I mean, A, the hello, Gordon, when they're looking down the hallway. And then B, when Caruso has to go back for his bag, you know, you're like, something's going to happen when he goes back for his bag. One thing I didn't like about this movie, which it's a minor thing that bothered me, but the three piano notes kind of bothered me.
Of them was on, like, they're in this patient room. I thought this was fucking awesome, actually, but it was very blatant what they were doing. But they're in a patient room on the tour, and the guy's showing, you know, there's pictures and clippings and stuff all over the wall. Apparently, this was some kind of therapy.
It was their seclusion therapy. They could paste the things up of what was in their thought process.
Yeah, and just the exposure to this, having this in your living space, you know, like would somehow do something to you. And the camera pans over, and one of the clippings says, "Suddenly, it's going to dawn on you." And at that moment, there's the three note, like ding, ding, ding. I'm like, look at that, you know. And then I think there was another clipping.
There's a few messages.
One of them said something about like a man with no history of violence suddenly something, you know, like was on the wall.
Yeah, they're there.
There's a picture of like four guys in a coffin.
Yeah, it looks like Old West, like when they prop up the outlaws in the Old West in the coffin.
It's like night people.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, and then when Hank's down in the tunnel as he's meeting his semi demise, I guess it would be, you see the shadow man at the end of the hall.
Yeah.
And at first I thought, oh, it's you know, the killer, but it's then the killer came from the other way. I don't know why I'm trying to save it. Gordon. I could have just said Gordon and saved myself a couple of words.
Well, it's cool because in the scene, I mean, it's set up like a horror movie scene. He's there at night. He hears a noise. Did I hear a noise? Okay, I'm going to go back to collecting my loot. And then he hears a couple more noises. And when he looks, he sees this figure at the other end. And then it's like, oh, shit. Who is that guy? There is somebody else here. But I mean, he's not like just imagining it. And then when he ran runs, the other direction, he runs into the killer again.
Then he runs into a room full of pigeons. Pigeons out in the country.
I can't remember. Hank doesn't do that. Because, I mean, when Hank's roaming around because he was lobotomized, he keeps saying, hey, what are you doing here?
Which is the last thing he said.
But did they actually show that in the movie? Because I remember they showed the nephew saying, hey, you know, it's, you know, recognize. I always like it when a killer recognizes the camera, like, hey, you know, like in Friday 13th, like, hey, what are you doing out here?
In that scene where Hank gets killed or, you know, gets attacked, you do not hear him scary. But you hear it later on.
During the reveal, right?
The recap.
That was cool.
Saw-like recap where they explain what the hell's going on.
Well, that's him remembering it, right? That's him breaking through his... Hey, what are you doing here?
At the start of that recap, I have to say, I thought it was going to be like a Fight Club type situation. Caruso's looking at him. He's like, you're me. I'm you. You know, like that. I was waiting for that.
Gordy's the only one at the asylum. The rest of them are in there.
So bad. Yeah. I hate when that happens. Yeah. Like an identity. Oh, Jesus. They're all him.
I liked identity. Yeah,
I like it too. I like it.
That's why I'm careful which podcasts I listen to.
They're all fake.
Certain ones, I'm like, I love this movie. Yeah, let's see. I've been around these guys. Enough. Yeah, I don't want to listen to that.
Yeah, don't listen to I know. What was that mirror? What was that one that Travis brought that we
spoiled the hell out of it. It was a pretty good one with
Christopher Reeve. Christopher Reeve.
Death Trap. Don't listen to Death Trap.
Well, unless you've seen the movie. I will tell you now, because I've been around y'all enough, I was flipping every one of you off during Streets of Fire. I was like, all of you. Because I love that movie. But anyway, yeah. I digress.
Dude, I thought that movie was awesome.
Okay, maybe I didn't flip you off then. You're okay. See, I knew I liked Tom for a reason.
I was the one that picked it.
I still like that.
We've probably made more enemies than fans with this podcast. We're just
holding on to nothing.
It's great.
So this movie, anyway.
So the whole Gordy's thing is the killer.
So let's get right, that out. We have to explain that to Tom. All right, so really, that's what happened.
Yeah. So there's no. Okay.
I mean, the first time
so
I saw
no
this.
There's no ghosts.
That countdown to the session nine, I sold me the first time I watched this movie. I was like, oh, dude, he cannot play that nine. Once he gets to that fucking ninth one,
it's over.
I was kind of
thinking
that.
Chains are going to be rattling.
Yeah,
and
bad shit's going to happen when you get to session nine. And Simon shows up. No.
Yeah. It was a cool,
kind of
like,
disappointed.
Like I said, I think it's a cool effect, though. You got the little princess voice. You got the little Billy voice, which is like a little, like, Oliver. Like,
but you can
like
still tell it's, yeah, the same it's the same actress. You can tell. Yeah. But it's, it,
well,
you
then
can
you
tell
got Simon,
different.
Who's like, that is not her. No. You know, hello, I'm Simon.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that was Mufasa, wasn't it? No, I'm just kidding.
It's Earl Jones. Sounded like, I imagine his voice to be the guy from Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, because he kept going, Doc. You know, like
it seemed very
well. It was cool. And in the end, my own personal take on it, Simon isn't a ghost, he's insanity.
Right. And Simon is mental illness.
The,
exactly.
Because the princess lives in the tongue, Billy lives in the eyes.
Because he sees everything.
Simon spelled backwards as
Nimos.
Namas?
Nimos?
Nimos!
I took a shot.
Hey, all satanic is inverted.
We all need to take a shot now.
So, session nine, guys.
Session nine.
Had a really cool, I mean, it's got to be the best, like, you see the cover of the movie is a fucking...
do we have that? I didn't even see it.
Goddamn. It's the image you've seen five times in the movie.
The wheelchair.
The wheelchair in the hallway. Like,
totally
that's the image. Like, they knew. Like, we've got a movie, guys.
I'm disappointed.
We've got this image.
The film starts out, it's an upside down shot of a hallway, and at the end of it, there is a wheelchair. Yeah. And then it spins right side up as the camera
kind of... I kept thinking going to be like a cool, like, little... Well, I mean, I guess...
But that book ends it, right?
I kept thinking there was going to be like a ghost or something freaky popping out. And you know what? I'm kind of glad there wasn't. I'm kind of glad it wasn't a horror movie.
I kind of feel like there was the ghosts popping out as I was watching it. Yeah. Because I was there with it. Like...
That's
but that was editing, that's right? That's the power of editing. I mean, really, you could look at that movie as a boring, well, not boring, but you know, you could, once you like clinically look at the story, it's like, this guy's stressed out, killed his wife, doesn't remember it.
Well, yeah, but
this guy's stressed out.
Telling.
You could,
exactly. It's all how you like.
I don't know.
Was it a ghost?
I mean, Gary, you've seen it how many times?
30
times.
Right around there, 20, so, 20 to 30 times, somewhere in there.
Is it still effective?
I still love the movie.
Yeah.
And like I said, I bag on Caruso. And I guess I really do it because of NYPD Blue and CSI Miami. But, you know, I've loved him in other movies.
He had his Caruso moment.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I was just going to say, I wanted Tom to deliver that line because he's the only one that's going to get
it's
it right. Because
it's done with like a super tight close up zooming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's where we're seeing everything break down. Mike is the middle neutral guy, you know, and he's kind of caught. You know, he's loyal to Gordy, but he also believes in Phil, too.
Yeah.
And you're watching this, it's breaking down. It's like, and that's where you pointed out. He's like, well, how could Hank be here? You know, are you stupid? He's in Miami. Amy said he's in Miami. Well, you heard, we all heard her say that. No, you heard her say it. We heard you on the phone.
Yeah.
We heard what you said. We didn't hear what she said. And then, so now they go back. And then Caruso looks like he's going a little nuts because he's like, so what you're saying is Amy wasn't on the phone. You can see the breakdown. And it's like, well, give me the cell phone. Why? Well, I want to call her. Well, you don't need to call her. I call her. And it's like this big argument. And they're telling, and Mike's like, no, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go to lunch. And they're like, nope, you stay here. And he's stuck in this whole mess. And Jeff's just standing there with his mouth open.
On this one, they hear the footsteps up above.
And he goes, it's Hank.
Yeah, which gets the biggest laugh of the film.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's that? It's Hank.
Because he tried to be dramatic. It's Warren. Warren, just go back to Robin Empire Records and stop.
But he just spent 10 minutes trying to explain to people that he just saw Hank in the fucking stairwell.
Because he did.
Yeah.
But again, then you go back and it looks like now maybe Jeff's slipping too.
Yeah.
Except for Gordy does see the coin on the floor.
Yes.
And those coins are scattered throughout the movie.
But I love that when he sees that Caruso's got the coin.
Like he remembers Phil having it.
Yeah, but see, but that's another tell.
Right.
You know? It's like, because at that point, you're not supposed to know that. But the fact that he reacts so, you know, like, holy shit, he's got this coin. He's like, you know, where have I seen this coin before? It's like, that must mean that you've seen, you know, Hank. You know, I mean, that's, again.
So do you think Gordy killed Phil? Well, even though Phil's like, I found Hank. He told me you did it.
I think that's when he killed him.
Gordy would have thought that maybe he did it since he's going fucking nutso anywho. Do you think Phil did it? With the coin? Or, like, seeing that he had the coin, do you think
Gordy would have thought that?
No, I think he found one dropped on the floor after Phil or Gordy had killed, or, well, lobotomized Hank.
Yeah.
Well, they do try to lead you that Phil Caruso.
Yeah, right? They're trying to kill Hank. Gordon thinks
right.
that Phil because well, he walks around with a knife. He had right. the knife. The last time you see him is. You know, you see him with Hank.
Because, I mean, Gordon is doing the whole, like, you know, you called her. We didn't talk to you. You know,
so and they do a close-up on his eyes.
Well, and let's not forget the motivation, which is Hank is sleeping with Phil's ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
So Gordon there's that motivation to kill him.
That stuff is extraneous. This is all, like, carefully like,
woven together
to put stressors on these guys and create this eventual
breakdown of the unit
where they just kind
of
go.
Yeah, some of the most important
scenes. I don't trust you.
And that's where we get, how does he say it again, Tom?
Fuck you!
But you really have to watch the lunchtime in this movie. Like, anytime that they break for lunch is when you're going to get most
they
of your clues.
The main they don't do any work. They had a week all time. Right.
Wait a second now. I got to defend the characters in this movie. They are working, but the director says people don't want to see them working.
No.
So we're just going to get to the parts where the story is actually being told at lunch.
No. They're working prior to that. No, dude.
Well,
no. They go to Friday. Random dude shows up to fill the work.
Craig McManus.
Ain't no work
the
been
savior.
Done. Nothing.
That's because Gordy's been killing everybody.
Yeah.
He killed everybody after 3 days.
Yeah. The first day.
They had to get it done in a week. They ain't done shit.
The first day, Caruso, at the end of the day, says that was a good first day.
Yeah. That'd be the worst. To get to a fucking first day.
And then slaps Phil in the head as he walks by. Well,
should have come today.
And Craig McManus is the Flash Gordon of the asbestos abatement world because he is the savior of the universe because everything hinges on him showing up on Friday. It'll all be better once Craig's here.
He's supposedly our fifth guy, but now he's our fourth guy.
And let me say, when Craig walks in, he walks into a crime scene, and he doesn't notice it until he gets up to
with Gordy having a major breakdown.
Like, trust these guys
face to face. Yeah, but there's a body on the floor. Like, huh?
Well, hey,
Hank's a wild man. Maybe he just likes to cover himself in plastic.
Well, and Tom will tell you these are some lazy bastards. He might have been taking a nap.
Yeah,
so it's possible
with a pick in his eye.
Yeah, with blood.
When he walked in and saw that none of the work been done and it's Friday and they got to be done by Monday,
the work had totally been done.
I would have been like, fuck this shit.
There were no tiles left on the ceiling.
Dude, there were tiles left on the ceiling.
There were no tiles left on the floor.
I think Craig was all coked out anyways. Did you see him pull into that parking lot? Then he looked at the building and he's like, fuck yeah.
Well, that's why you be an independent contractor.
Yeah. Okay, so Craig McManus is played by the writer, director, actor, Larry Fessenden. Well, I followed this guy's career for a while.
Really,
and
what?
He's like, you know, Glass Eye Pictures? So, okay, well, this is a little sidebar. Larry Fessenden is like this guy who makes these horror movies and founded his own little studio in New York and writes, directs, produces, stars in like a fuckload. Like, Ty West came out of, like, he's like a modern day Roger Corman.
Hmm.
Ty West came out of his stuff. I mean, there's a bunch of other guys that are doing like these little
movies. Any titles that are?
Most famous might be Wendigo. Mm. He did one called Habit, which I really like. He did one called
Habit.
No Telling. And he did one called The Last Winter. I think those are the only movies that he's directed. But he's produced like a bunch of other stuff, all these other, you know, filmmakers and stars. He shows up in little bit parts.
So not anything good.
Well, a lot of them are good. Yeah.
Perspective.
Yeah. Bringing Out the Dead. What the hell was it called? They had Ron Perlman and the kid from Lost, the guy who was in Drive Shaft.
I Saw the Dead.
Yeah.
That was one of his?
He produced it. He's one of the guys in it. It's him and...
Oh, it's him and Simon Pegg?
Dominic Monaghan. Aren't they the two guys?
Oh, yeah.
Simon Pegg was in another version of it.
Yeah.
Huh? What?
Sorry. I forgot to silence my phone. That was me.
Hello, Gary. We are here to talk about Simon.
I just pissed my pants. I heard this like 1920s.
It's my noir. Ringtone.
This may be like way off the course, but I go to my friend's house the other night and they've got a radio hooked into a outlet. And I guess when you turn the bathroom light off, the outlet dies. So when you turn it on, the radio goes boop. It was like,
well, now I don't need to go.
Yeah, I was just like, so that was my kind of Simon moment there.
I thought that was coming from the laptop. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was over there. Sorry about that.
I'd like to think it was Simon, right? Just like I hate Children of the Corn too, because I'm like, fucking Corn, no way. It was He Who Walks Behind the Rose. I don't like to think that it's some normal thing.
Yeah, I like to think it was contaminated corn.
Yeah, do you? I'm on the other camp. I'm like, there are no ghosts in this movie. This is all mental.
It's all insanity.
I can't see any signs of ghosts.
But why would he kill that? My only problem is, I get him killing his family, but why kill everybody else? Because, I mean, okay, obviously he maybe has some problems with Phil. He doesn't have problems with Hank. He doesn't have problems with Mike. He doesn't have problems with his nephew.
Why did he kill
McManus?
But it's not to cover up anything because he's crazy.
Well,
it's the same reason like The Shining why he has to kill his family.
Why did he kill Jeff?
Like I said, that's his family though. I don't see why he has to kill these other four guys wandering around. That's why I think it was a ghost.
Well, yeah, but when what's his face, the regular caretaker shows up, The Shining kills him too, but the axe, right?
But in that, it's because he's the house servant says he's the outsider. It's like come into this domestic dispute, you know, situation, and you have to take care of him too, or whatever.
I think the ghost is out to do no good. You know, I mean, it is going to kill anything that comes into it.
There's a parallel between the story of Mary Hobbs and Simon, because Simon, the personality that would take over and put the others to sleep. This is the one that was the homicidal psychotic who scared people. Well, you know, we find out that it's actually killing them. Even Simon's repressing that from himself.
Yeah.
Peter scared Mary.
Yeah.
So Simon's like, let's kill
Because Mary, like, oh, Peter, oh, yeah, Peter, to clarify, Peter got a, for Christmas, got a brand new
Mary's
knife.
Brother.
Oh, Mary, she scarred her.
Mary got a new porcelain doll, and when Peter snuck up behind her, scared her, she fell on the doll and cut her breast off.
That's why they thought that the family was whatever. Right. Because her.
That's when Simon entered her and told her, you need to cut Peter up. He's got a nice sharp knife. Well, then once she did, well, you better kill your mom and dad too, because they're going to find out.
Right, but I think that's what's happening here.
Yes.
Once it creeps in, Hank has been discovered.
That's right. Well, he tells Phil, I hit her, and then Phil's going around telling people, we're in trouble.
Phil's a snitch, and snitches get stitches. That's a rule.
I got to take out Mike, then I got to take out Jeff.
Yes. I think he takes Hank out first, just because you think Gordon says he's staying at a hotel, but really he's just sleeping outside of the fucking.
So he sees Hank go in, and he follows him in. Well, there's other scenes.
He does have his eyes fucking closed.
Well, but he looks
though.
Like he's sleepwalking.
Shit, yeah. Ooh, ghostly.
There's other scenes where he sees his shadow walking through the. Well, you find out later it's him, but there's his shadow walking.
See, that's what I've always had a problem with, because the shadow was still at the other end. He ran this way.
I don't care how crazy you are. You got to have your eyes.
He was in front of
it.
So unless he looped around,
I think he looped around.
I know, but I'm saying it gave the illusion that there's something else there.
Yeah.
And that's where the ghost thing came in with me.
I'm buying it now. Now that his eyes were closed. I'm thinking about his eyes.
It's a possession.
Like it could have been.
There's,
like a
well, there's that scene.
Tool.
All right, how about this? There's that scene where Gordon's out, you know, and Caruso's about to smoke a fat J.
Yeah.
And
we've heard that's what they're called.
Yeah, he's
one big joint.
I just want to call it grass. He's smoking grass.
Smoking some grass.
Oh. I love yeah. calling it grass.
Reefer.
But anyway, Gordon pulls up and he's like, you know, they talk for a minute, yeah. but at that point he kind of starts to break down. He's like, I just want to go home. It almost feels like he's stuck there.
He's sad.
Yeah, yeah, like he can't leave that asylum. Almost like the ghost has taken over.
No.
Has
See, that's why I'm surprised everybody didn't get the fact that he killed his wife from the get go. Because it's like this actor is such a good actor, but he's like in tears this whole movie. For like, yeah. what's going on, Gordon? He's like, nothing.
But you can tell.
I didn't right. like the actor.
Oh, you're crazy.
It's the accent. Like the accent threw you.
You're, the accent yeah. threw you. Oh, you just don't like. Oh,
so you just don't like foreigners. Yeah, you just don't like foreigners.
I want Americans in my movie.
It's like the accent. The accent threw me off.
A fucking nationalist over.
I know. Jesus Christ.
Didn't like the accent. It's the just accent crazy. Bothered me.
It's just like He's the good old actor. Days where Tom finds one thing.
Hey,
that's like, can't let it
what?
Go.
Well, hey.
That was not a 90s hairstyle.
The question is why the hell was like, hey, oh, he's, oh, I got this weird look accent, mate.
And it was like Scottish or something.
Scottish accent.
But his, Australian. Scottish, Australian. They're
but
all the
his
same.
Nephew?
Well, but his nephew was American born. They said that guy lived in the old country.
It was, what was his wife's
name? They said
name?
He did hauling.
Wendy. Okay, it was Wendy's nephew.
Yeah, because they say, he says, Aunt. Caruso has like a line where he's talking to somebody else. I can't remember who it is. But he's like, he was into that there, and he's into yeah. that here.
So he came.
He's talking about him moving from Scotland
to America.
I didn't like the fact that he was a foreigner.
From another country.
Hey, that's the definition.
That's how my family got here.
The definition of racism.
Just define racism.
Or no, it's xenophobia. It's xenophobia. Not racism, it's xenophobia.
Which is not endorsed by the Saturday Night Freak
American
Show.
American propaganda.
Well, okay, we can bring this back around to the movie. What was the, what did he call the Afraid of the Dark?
Nyctophobia.
Nyctophobia.
That's like the good one awesome shot scene in this movie.
That is.
When it
is.
Always going dark. Yep. It's like, that's gotta be CG, right?
No,
it has to be.
I think you could do
to
that
be so close behind it. Yeah. I mean, it got so dark right behind. I'm like, there's gotta be some CG in there.
In all fairness, those lights
I kind of am too.
I got it all at once, just dimmed out.
It looked great.
It wouldn't have went one bulb to a next. It just all went down at once.
That was kind of lame. If the generator dies, it's not gonna
cool because it was this is a guy a character who's afraid of the dark and the darkness is chasing him down.
Yes,
it was
awesome. It's enveloping him.
I know it's a cool shot, but it's not gonna happen.
And I believe that a chain link light system may do that.
Well, you believe that all you want.
Once again, I'm going for ghost.
I believe someday Cindy Crawford's coming to my house, but I bet it ain't going to happen.
But, what did you say?
I said, I believe someday Cindy Crawford's going to come to my house, but I bet it's not going to happen. No, and that's the thing. And when it shows where he gets that one spot where there's the light coming through and he's out of breath and he's like, he's having a panic attack.
He's inhaled
that was
a
really good. And I'll give him that. Yeah, he's come a long way from war.
That's what is that? So, like,
that scene was
all
good.
It would take. It's like, he's like a fucking swamp thing or something like that where he just needs to touch the sunlight and be like, oh, light.
Well, because you notice he's not moving. He's terrified that this is his,
well, even
his
when
life
he comes
raft.
Right out, he just wants to run as far away from that building as he can. It is a very intense
And he's got asbestos dust coming off him. At that point, he doesn't care about lung cancer. Awesome. It's all coming off.
It might as well have been a wall of fire.
That's cool. That was a really good scene.
Yeah.
The poor guy got killed for eating an Oreo.
Yeah, that's what happened. Well, stay out of people's stuff.
My dead wife's Oreos.
Yeah. Well, before we do wrap ups here, I suppose we should talk about. So, Brad Anderson is the guy who made this movie, who has gone on. Is this his first movie? I'm saying he did something before this.
What was it? Hold on. I researched it. He did a lot of like Homicide, Life on the Streets, The Shield. He's done some Boardwalk Empire.
Prior to this?
Yeah. Homicide, Life on the Streets was before this.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. So he was doing TV.
Boardwalk Empire, that's pretty recent within the past
Three
years.
Well, and if you look at most of the characters in the movie, all of them at one point or another have been in either Homicide, Life on the Streets, Law and Order Special Victims Unit, one of the Law and Orders, which he's been on, or NYPD Blue.
What actor hasn't been in a while?
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're all tied together. No, I'm saying this group, they've all worked together before this movie.
And this is before, I don't know if Josh Lucas is famous anymore, but it seemed like he had his moment in mainstream. Well, he was in The Hulk.
Stealth killed it.
Stealth killed it. Okay, so but this was on his like way up.
Oh, the Ang Lee's?
Yeah.
That's why I don't remember.
That's, well, okay. All right, I take that back. Wait, Stealth killed his career.
Which one?
Josh Hank was in the hole.
Hank, the guy with the mustache.
Hank was also in American Psycho. He was Craig McDermott.
Shit. Yeah, that's right. He was one of the cards. Like, this is my business card scene, guys.
I like that actor. He was a good actor.
Yeah.
Good actor.
Brad Anderson did, I want to say, he would, like, after this, it's like, he did The Machinist, which is the one that Christian Bale famously lost, like, a fuckload of weight to play the skeletal machinist, which is another psychological
drama. Don't ruin it.
All right, let's see. Okay, sorry.
That's all right. Don't say no more.
We have to be gentle with Brent.
Yep.
Say no more.
And, have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
Well, you need to see it.
And it's decent. I didn't think that one. Well, I remember maybe not reviewing The Machinist. I'm totally going to. I didn't think it
was a
movie where like it required an actor to make that great of a fucking sacrifice. It was like, wow, you. For this movie, really?
Yeah, all right.
It's not like Stallone eating a few extra pies to put on the pounds for Copland.
Or De Niro doing it for The Untouchables. I mean, it's like The Machinist?
But did ever hear, I mean, originally...
But it's effective as hell.
Dude, for the... I don't know why we're talking about this, but Batman Begins, Christian Bale gained a ton of weight originally.
Because he was bouncing back from The Machinist.
Well, no, because he thought that... What's his face? Christopher Nolan wanted him to be a bulky Batman.
Yeah,
and he was like, no, that's too much.
Didn't Tom Hardy put on it? Tom Hardy put a few pounds for him.
He put on it. Yeah.
But, on a few pounds.
He bulked up.
But it's all, it looks like muscle. What else did Brad Anderson do?
Well, he did The Killing, the show The Killing.
Really?
He's been working on that. And our buddy Warren, Brendan Sexton, he's in The Killing. So, again, these guys have worked together and continue to work together on different projects.
Trans-Siberian, that was another Brad Anderson film.
Was it really? Man, I like this guy. Wow.
And Peter Moulin, too. He was in Trainspotting.
He's a drug dealer in... but he also, like, Mother or something, that's his name in Trainspotting. It's like...
It's been so long.
Mother Superior.
Yeah.
But he's like a director or something. I want to say maybe he did Angela's Ashes or something like that. I don't know.
Well, he does direct, but I looked through his directing credits, and I'm like, I really couldn't speak knowledgeably about any of them. Gordon. He is a director.
Okay.
Yeah, I can picture him in Trainspotting. I can picture him in Trainspotting.
I love the accent.
Should we wrap this?
Yes.
First of all, before we
wrap,
mailbag.
Mailbag section at the beginning, do you think?
Well, we can't because they're talking about the movie.
Are they?
Out of the way first,
All right, so do we have like a mailbag theme song? Maybe we should.
We need one.
Like, we should all just yell mailbag really loud at the count of three.
I'll think of another one. Let's not do that.
Mailbag. Okay, that was me by myself.
All right, now edit point.
I'll think of something.
Jonathan Kehoe. Kehoe. I hope I'm saying your name right.
Kehoe!
Says, the part where the guy is walking through the dark along the chain link fence in the hallway, nightmares. One of the most terrifying moments I have ever imagined myself in while watching a horror movie. The chain link fence.
He's talking about Hank. Yeah.
Being chased.
You see the Shadow Man.
Yeah.
I could poo myself a little on that one. I'll be honest.
Claustrophobic.
Yeah. That was
you just get that one flashlight. That's the time where it's like you don't need fucking lights to make a movie. Look at that. That's what's effective. One guy with a flashlight.
At that point, though, I mean it's still a Stephen King story, right? Because he just found all this money. He went back to get it. He's getting it now. He's gonna try and get his way out, and then there's the Shadow Man. So at that point, he's guilty. And he's going to pay
for his plan.
I'm coming to get. Yeah. Well, he's sifting through teeth with gold fillings, glasses, hair, glass eyes.
If he wasn't like making his little piles and counting this shit like Daffy Duck. You know?
So unlike the lipstick in Night of the Demons that can't cross the streams, he hasn't went across anything, and he's touching all these things that belong to dead people.
Yeah.
So some of that taint's got to wear off on you, and that's why again I got the ghost thing.
It's still a ghost.
Then longtime commenter Nick Hammond says,
Nick,
I remember seeing this movie but can't recall too much about it. But what I can remember is that it was an all right movie, even though I am not a fan of over actor Caruso. Ooh, that's harsh. Harsh.
No. Harsh. His one-liners in CSI Miami. How does it go? Exactly. He brought CSI Miami to Session 9. Damn him. But go ahead.
He says, what I do remember from the movie is how awesome that asylum looked. As a ghost hunter,
yes.
I would have loved to investigate that place. I read it's mostly torn down now. Just imagine what kind of energy was held in those walls with the years of barbaric tests done on those people. I have yet to investigate a building of that caliber.
Willowbrook.
And hope to here in the future. Dun, dun, dun.
Nick, there's a place outside of Chicago. I forget what it is. I don't know what it's like now, but like probably like 10 years ago I went in there and it was fucking scary. It's an insane asylum. I want to say it's south of Chicago, like maybe 45 minutes.
There's one in Peoria, too. It was an insane asylum. I looked at it where I think they give like tours and stuff like
yeah.
that. I mean,
this was like not repaired at all. Like, we shouldn't have been in there. It was terrifying.
Well, there are places we talked about that. Willowbrook with Cropsey.
Yeah. I mean, this is in between seeing the movie and doing the podcast. We're out for smoke and we're talking about, you know, like, some of the footage that we've seen over the years from, like, back in the 80s or the 70s from these institutions. I mean, like, they really were cesspools where, like, you know, you think of, like, oh, it's hospitals treating patients and everybody's in a room and strapped down to a bed or, you know, I suppose that's not a good
thing. Anything government funded is going to be, like, the lowest.
Well, and that's where they started calling them snake pits, and they referred to that in the movie.
And people just, like,
that's why they just shut them all down in the past 10 years.
There's just, like, a spilling out of humanity into hallways uncleaned up by anybody, not looked after. It's like, this is just where you dump your problems.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's a human landfill.
Their own filth. I mean, it was like shocking, you know?
Yeah.
But that's kind of where those things.
And the saddest part is those are the people that need the most help and weren't getting any. Yeah.
And then when they shut these places down, they just turn them out and
dump them on the street.
I'm starting to think there was like, I think, well, I guess this is going to go far beyond. I think the reason none of this shit ever helped is because psychology has always been a jip. It's a bullshit science. And once they figured, oh, guys, people are onto us. We can't do anything for any of these people. Well, now let's find a chemistry thing to start lobotomizing that, you know, instead of the fucking pick in the eyeball.
Well, that's why I like
chemistry lobotomizing.
I like what you said during the movie. Was never trust scientists. Never this trust is why I never trust scientists.
Lobotomy was a great idea. Every newspaper across America talked about how lobotomy was so great, and all the scientists agreed on it. It's like, well, that's what you get with fucking crazy science.
The upside is that we stand at a point in time where we can look back on that and say that it's, you know, it was not a wise decision.
Yeah, oh, like, yeah. But 20 years from now, we'll stand back and
we're
go,
just chemical.
Maybe lithium wasn't such a great idea.
Yeah, it's like now we're just chemically lobotomized. We're still not doing it. We're still not fixing the problem. We're too ashamed.
Well, we got everything's medicated. Everything's masked with medication.
All right, let's wrap it up. Let's
sprint up first.
Let's do it. Always up first. Man. Okay, so Session 9 is a mind scramble fuck.
Mind fuck.
It's a breakfast fuck omelet scramble for your brain.
Order that. I'll have what she's having.
It's pretty great. I have a unique situation where a member of the Freak Show, I'm not going to name names here, but we talked early on because we worked together and we talked about this film not knowing that Gary was going to pick it. And I learned a few of the secrets, like the main secret, right? So I went into it knowing this and thank you. And it's kind of like when you watch, spoiler alert, The Sixth Sense and fuck it. I mean, Bruce Willis is a ghost, right?
Oh, no, he is? What the hell, dude?
Samuel Jackson's a ghost.
So it's been like 20 years. Deal with it. So like you go into this movie with the kind of the same idea, right? Like, well, if you know it, then you go in watching it, trying to figure it out. And it was still enjoyable watching it, trying to see like how each thing played into it. Because I mean, I knew that Gordy had killed his family or his wife and his daughter. I mean, yeah, his family for the most part, but I didn't know how it all went down. I knew that he was repressing it, but I didn't know how that was going to go down. So I'm still kind of watching this with a fresh eye. And while I'm watching it, I kind of have the best of both worlds because I can discover it for the first time, but at the same time, I can look at it analytically and see how all the pieces fit in together. And I've only seen it this one time, but I think it's flawless. I mean, I definitely want to go back and watch it again because I think it works as a psychological thriller. I think it works as a ghost story. That last line of the film really has me messed up because I think about that, you know, like maybe it was all Simon the whole time. Like this, as soon as Gordon stepped foot in that asylum, Simon took over, and that could very well be because that checks out too, you know. I mean, maybe that's a little bit more convenient, but at the same time, I kind of like that a little bit better. But I subscribe to both theories. I highly recommend it. I think that everyone should watch this movie. Yeah, I mean, check it out. Get it. Watch it, Tom.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, you know, yeah.
What?
Yeah. I fall into the dinosaurs. Category of dinosaurs. I like dinosaurs. I don't really care for horror movies.
DNA.
I don't really care. For
foreigners.
Foreigners.
Yeah. This is what he's like. It's like, well, it's a horror movie. I don't like it. You're from Scotland. Don't like you either. I like my shit American. I like it to blow up.
He likes comedy. American comedies.
That explode.
That explode. Yeah.
And dragons.
Yeah,
dragons.
With dragons.
Oh, you got shit going fast.
If you do not meet that criteria, that's already a point off. I think in Tom's mind, that's how it works. Wait, is there a dragon in this movie? No? That's a negative star.
Wait, hold negative on. Star.
Tom, what if McConaughey played Hank?
McConaughey. Oh, well, you know.
That would have been a star right there.
Might have been a star. It was, you know, let's see. The movie was really slow, actually. I think it probably, like, it would have been awesome as, like, an hour-long drama. Like, really good as an hour-long drama. It dragged out way too long. Like, the build-up... Like, you know, most horror movies... To say it's a horror movie is kind of like almost a misnomer, because, like...
Big word.
Nothing happens in, like, the first 45 minutes, practically. Like, it's like the last half hour is when stuff actually goes on. So, like, if you are going to watch it, just fast forward the last half hour. Boom! You're good to go. You're good for a treat.
I'm Tom's shaking
Cliff,
my
Tom's
hand.
Tom's cliff noting the movie.
Yeah. Just, you know, boom, last half hour, you're in for a treat. Maybe watch that beginning with the chair. You watch that beginning where it's like, hello, Gordon. Fast forward last 45 minutes.
All right, hold on.
Boom! Good.
I'm calling you out. This is how Tom says he listens to the podcast now.
Yes.
But he's not on it. He fast forwards to the wrap-ups.
I'll listen to the intros. I get the intros. Fast forward to... That's all you need.
What'd you say earlier? He wants the the appetizer and the dessert. He doesn't want the entree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It's like attention deficit disorder or something.
Yeah, there's no...
I can't be entertained by this.
There's nothing going on.
There's fuckloads of shit going on in this movie.
They're not doing fuckloads. Their work is what's going on.
This tonight is on
character movie.
Tonight on Tom's AD&D theater.
There's fuckloads.
Fuckloads of character
there's stuff. There's fuckloads of stuff going on.
Oh my god.
It's like, if you want to watch them not do work for an hour.
If that's what you're looking for, you're like, the movie, it has to be, it's about them removing asbestos. Where was them removing asbestos?
I've done that job. It is not that interesting.
That's a star demerit. Right there. No star.
You're right. They're not doing the job, man.
They're
not doing the job.
It's not about them doing the job.
They worked so hard to get that bonus.
I forgot about this.
So hard to get the bonus. The whole goal was for them to get the bonus. They didn't even do a damn bit of asbestos removing. What kind
it's like
of
running a long distance race. You don't do anything the first 3 days. You do it in the last four. That's how you do it.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. Session 9. Watch the last half hour. It's pretty good.
Do you recommend?
Is that a recommendation?
Well, it was a half recommendation. Watching the last half hour.
Which you have to get through. But anyway, okay. So this is Colin. I'm going to do my... No, I think Session 9 is in... So what was this, 2001?
2001.
I want to say that this is one of the best horror movies of the 2000s. I mean, you know, I would say... There's maybe like 50 good movies out of 10 years.
50?
That's pushing good. It. Yeah.
Okay. So I would
this
say
this is one of the good horror movies. Well, of
it's
the past,
it's
like,
15 if you don't. It's 15 if you don't count Japanese ghosts.
Right. Well, so, I'm saying worldwide.
Right.
You know, I think you could find 50 good horror movies in a decade. This is one of them. You know. Okay. So right, maybe it's higher. Maybe it's in the 20s.
Yeah, I'd say maybe 20.
I think it's a very sharply written movie with a lot of, not innuendo. What am I looking for? Subtlety, which is a thing I think that, you know, again, is a, maybe a lost art. There's a lot of subtlety, you know, to the, and nuance to the characters and to the plot, you know, and the way that it's constructed. It is like a kind of a little puzzle box. It's like you have to have all this setup in order to have this payoff. And like all of these things working on each other to like, you know, it's just that's the stuff that gets you involved. That's why I'm saying there's a fuckload of stuff going on. Whose wrap up is this? So it's interesting. Interesting stuff that keeps you absorbed and involved through the entire running time of the movie. And I do like, you know, like as we've been sitting here, it's like I think you can see this as a supernatural movie, or you can see it as a psychological horror movie. I think it's a psychological horror movie, right?
I think it's a psychological definitely. Movie. It's psychological, not horror, yeah. But psychological.
People died in
people
it.
People died, and
murder
it was creepy.
Is horror.
Yep.
But they brought it on
the
themselves,
right?
According to Caruso at the end.
But I would say that this is, you know, it's because of the, and like, I mean, the acting, I'm going to say like, you know, I mean, I think all the guys had good parts. I think that's, that helps, you know, if you're an actor and you've got like a good role, like all these roles are pretty fucking good for those guys, you know, and I think they're all ably performed in some cases, most cases, I think better than the material suggests. And wasn't this like a comeback role for Caruso? Like he had kind of gone underground and people forgot about him.
Well, that's after like, he had went through his whole ego trip about NYPD Blue, and he thought he was the end-all, be-all actor, and then he did a few so-so movies. I did like Jade, but yeah, he did kind of come back.
Those are
on
like
this
big
one.
Studio movies,
right? And this is his comeback to like, the arts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's. I think it's a sharp movie, a good horror film. I think that you need to see it. That's a recommendation. Yeah.
It's crazy that I like this movie, but I do agree with Tom in a weird little bit where I think this does play better as like if it was like an hour long or 45 minutes, just because I don't like I said, there's like, I mean, all the characters are interesting. I think Mike is not interesting at all. His character is nothing. I mean, Gordon could have taken the role of investigating the hospital more, but he was going through his crazy, I killed my wife. So they split up that attention a little on the characters. I like this movie. I have a hard time going back. Movies that have like any sort of like a twist or a once you figure it out, it's kind of like you know, it's hard to go back and be surprised every time. Or you know, like this time it was no quite. You know, it's just like oh look, peanut butter.
Question,
oh look, the thingy.
Question: When you go back through a movie that you've already seen and it has a twist the second time around, do you appreciate the construction of it like a puzzle box? Like I was saying. Does
see,
it play
this,
more like
but
that?
this one never really had that effect on me. Right from the get-go, yeah, I'm like, right, oh, yeah. Gordon killed his wife and family, and he's suppressing it the same way this Mary Hobbs character. It's like, I had this movie figured out like right from my first time watching it. I mean, I like the little character tiffs. I mean, it's a good movie. I mean, I don't want it to sound like it sounds like I'm giving it like a pretty like down note just because like, I don't know, after seeing it twice.
It's good the first time through is what you're saying.
It's really good the first time through. I mean, because it is one of those things where you're expecting a horror movie. You don't get a ghost movie, but you're still getting all this weird shit, you know? And really, I guess to me, I mean, have like a scary like doctor talking to a girl like, audio going over anything in a movie, and I'm like, oh shit!
There's like a
this
second
is
movie
scary.
Happening that you don't see.
It's genius. It really is genius.
Like the distortion's kind
of
cool.
That's like, awesome. Yeah. Well, every single time they say the name of the town, it fucks up. Every time it has the same fucked up. Like, what happened in life? You know, or whatever. Right. But I do recommend it. I mean, I wish it was a ghost movie. You know, like yeah, it is the. I mean, I think that's my problem with it. It's a little too. It's more artsy than it is ghost. You know, and I think that's why I ultimately like, you know, I've never been that much of a fan of art. I mean, I like art. But, you know, the whole, like, Simon, I live in the... I like the weak and the wounded. But, you right. know, it has to be one of those, like, open-ended, like, thing for the artist out there to be like, right? It's in all of us, man.
Because I can escape from here. I'm not trapped just here. It's if what, you're out there and you're weak and you're wounded, I can come to you, too. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, I recommend it. It's not my favorite, but I do recommend it. It is probably at least one of the watchable ones out of the last 20 fucking years. It's not like Saw or Urban Legends or anything. So, and it's not like any other ghost movie where you just know you're going to get like a few like stupid like shadow people and then like a long-haired white-dressed woman at the end walking creepily towards you or whatever. So it definitely has some things going for it, and it's got some twists and turns. But I do think it could have been a like a TV show episode and still been awesome. So a little long-winded, but I like it.
Okay, it is actually my favorite movie from that decade. In horror, yeah, this is my favorite movie. I've seen it about 30 times, and honestly, I enjoy the ride every single time because I feel, I guess I work in the industry, so... I know what it's like to try and get
the
a bit
horror
of a
industry.
No, no, no. I'm sorry. The construction industry. So, and I have done. I have. Yes, but that's a side job. No, and the cops insane? Haven't found all of them, so that don't count. So, but anyway, no. I do work in the construction, so I know what it's like to make a bid, and you got your family, you got all that pressure because you got to pay the bills. So I feel that part of it. I feel the claustrophobia in the hospital. There are scenes. And like I said, the hospital is the one actor that isn't credited in the movie because it really does set the pace. The interactions between the characters. I've been on construction sites, and a lot of it is the way it is. You know, we don't sleep with each other's girlfriends because that leads to fistfights in real construction sites. But it is a fun movie. Watching Gordon, I guess I'm kind of sympathetic for Gordon at the end because being a family man, now granted, I've had bad days at work. I've never went home and killed my family because I'm not insane. But what I'm saying is, in the end, you do kind of almost feel for Gordon when he's talking on the broken cell phone. You can see there's nothing left. It's broken. He fell on it when he was taking out Craig. And he goes, I just want to come home. I'm so lonely here. He's destroyed everything, and now I don't know if it's Simon's done with him, so he just goes on and he realizes he has nothing left. You know, so I do feel, even though he's a complete tool and he's the killer in the movie, at the end I do feel sympathy for Gordon. You almost feel sad for the character.
He doesn't know he's the killer.
No, he didn't. Yeah. And even when Caruso comes up and he's looking at the pictures and he sees his family's on the wall and he looks at Caruso, Caruso still looks like he might be the killer because he just kind of looks like he checked out. But then you realize that's what Gordon saw him as, not as what he actually did. He actually came in and said, well, I found Hank, and Hank said, you're the one that hurt him. Did you really do that, Gordon? And then Gordon attacks Caruso and kills him. But I like what you said about how Caruso is almost like his Jiminy Cricket. You know, trying to bring him back out of this madness. And in the end, Gordon does need to wake up. He just needs Caruso as his mental alarm clock. And then he realizes what he did. And you see each character and how he did them in.
Yeah.
You know, but I do like how, to me, it's a tapestry piece because each character is woven into the other. And there's ways that it could be this person. You could see it being Mike, not so much Hank or Jeff. Those two are kind of simplistic to me. Hank is the greedy jerk that doesn't care. He's just going to do for himself, whether it be taking Crusoe's girlfriend or off to casino school or stealing the coins out of this crematorium. Whatever benefits Hank, that's what Hank's going to do. He's unreliable. Crusoe says that from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff is just kind of that dopey kid that got drug into it. It's his family. Thinks, oh, this is going to be a great way for me to improve my life. And winds up getting whacked. So, you know, you kind of feel bad for Jeff, too. But I do think it is a character study, like you said, set in a haunted house. And it's watching these characters. And this is what I said. They are, you see the asylum from the outside. It's still gorgeous. It's still a gorgeous brick building, beautiful spires. But you get inside, and even the paint in the stairwells is so chipped and corroded and broke down. And I think in the end, we see that in all the characters. Gordon's just the one that it gets into. It seeps into him first. It looks like it could seep into everybody else. And maybe it did on some levels.
But Gordon was definitely the one that was taken first. And in the end, it abandons him just like it does everybody else because there's more weak and wounded to deal to. And I do like on the cover, it says Session 9, fear is a place. And you do feel that in the asylum. It does feel like a living thing in some parts to me, especially the scene where Hank's in the basement and he's running away from the shadow guy and poor old Jeff in the collapsing light hallway. You know, you can feel that terror in these characters. So, like I said, it is one of my favorites, probably my favorite one out of that decade. And I'll probably go home and watch it again tonight. I just love this movie. So high recommendation from me. Definitely check it out. And that's it for me.
There you go. That's Session 9 on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Hey, if you want to leave us a comment, I should have said this earlier, on the mailbag, go to our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, and we'll read it on air. And next week, you can start commenting now about next week's movie. You're about to find out what it is because it's Brent. He's picking it. What's it going to be, Brent? What are you watching?
Next week, Colin, we are going to watch A Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Whoa.
Dream Warrior.
Awesome. Yes. One of my favorites.
Mine too.
Yep. Well, there you go. All right. So this, if you have a question, comment, or just want to sound off on Dream Warriors, facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the balcony is closed.
Copyright.
And we might even have a mailbag theme by then.
I was going to say, it's going to be like, oh, when there's mail, we never fail to get it.
Oh my God, did you just go back to 1920? I put you singing that at the USO.
Can you come up with it right now?
No, I'll have to come up with it later.
When there's mail, you know there's a mailbag.
Because that was the same line.
And we've got those Nazis on the run.
What's that fucking blue dog that was on Nickelodeon?
Marmaduke. No.
Pork chop.
Blue's Clues?
Blue's Clues. Blue's Clues.